This is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers. Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid as an offensive weapon, when if you're the Steelers, he's come across as a bit of a weapon himself in different ways.
And Adam Nathan.
It's tricky because Hugh Jackson said nothing for me to shove him in.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Go Hawks.
Sometimes when you make a joke, it does have a way of coming back and biting you on the backside. So with that in mind, welcome to on this edition of the Pedestrian Podcast. Myself, Stuart Court, is joined by the newly christened LOL Hawk. How are we, sir?
I do like taking a joke too far, and especially if it maybe drifts over the head of a few on occasion. And I think this week has certainly seen an example of that, but very delighted with my new Seahawk nickname. Although I think I'll stick with Adam just for the sake of professional purposes on this podcast anyway.
Yeah, well, professional purposes in this podcast is not often used in the same thing.
Yeah, a bit of an oxymoron, but hey, it still goes.
That's a welcome addition to this week. This week we will talk about last Thursday night. It was nearly a week ago now, so anger and frustrations may have subsided. Some people in the Seahawks coaching staff are making sure that doesn't completely subside. Then we will look ahead to this week's massive NFC playoff implicated game down in Carolina in Charlotte against the Panthers, as well as welcome on a pretty cool guest as we move ahead to this weekend's Apple Cup against Washington State Cougars and the Washington Huskies, which is up for all the Pac-12 North Apples, which is quite fit in. But this week, as always, we will start with what happened recently, and that was last Thursday night on primetime with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman against the Green Bay Packers. This is how it sounded on the NBC.
Now third down and goal. End zone. Pass caught. Baldwin. Touchdown. In trouble, and down he goes. A sack for the Seahawks and for Frank Clark. Now third down and goal. End zone. Pass caught. Baldwin. Touchdown. In trouble, and down he goes. A sack for the Seahawks and for Frank Clark. Rodgers. Down he goes. And a sack for the Seattle defense. Rodgers keeps. Steps through, and down he goes, and a big play is made by Reed.
And then they collapse on him. That's really great awareness and great defense by Thompson.
That's the fourth sack by the Seahawks. Hand off again on third down and one, and he's got it. Carson inside the 20. What a strong run. Rodgers in trouble. Down he goes. Another third down sack.
But the Seahawks have been able to collapse it.
That is five sacks for this Seahawk defense. Blitz coming off the edge. Pass caught. Touchdown, Dixon.
So, yeah, the Seahawks started, if anything, but quick, but finished off strong, which is something which has been a storyline over the weeks before. Beating Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers 27-24 at CenturyLink Field to move back to an even 500 at 5-5 with a pretty tough slate coming up in the next few weeks. But before we get into the nitty gritty, as we do every week, overall thoughts on the win, and especially considering how it all started, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, considering we should have been 17-0 down at one point, it was an amazing turnaround. And it was strange. The Seahawks don't normally do that. It kind of happens against them where all of a sudden you're winning and two quick scores against and you're losing. And all of a sudden, from being 14-3 down, Chris Carson runs one in and we're all of a sudden in the lead. And having been pretty pissed off and thought, oh my God, why am I staying up to watch this rubbish? Is it worth going to bed at half time? All of a sudden we're in the lead strangled the opposition and ended up coming away with a massive win.
Yeah, it was a very strange, the final, I don't know, 40 minutes of it kind of made you forget the first opening salvo of it, because it was a bit chalk and cheese last week, with a few ailments and with a few issues, as has always been the case and is the case with these 2018 Seahawks. As always, we all start at a quarterback who's probably the biggest chalk and cheese of the lot. They won for 31, 225, two touchdowns, zero interceptions, and 17 more yards, including a pretty important 12-yard dash late on, which helped seal the game. But he was, when the scoreboard was slanted to the Packers, he was nowhere near his best, was he, on last Thursday?
No, he had a couple of really weird drives. That throw to Baldwin, probably the worst throw he's ever made as a Seahawk, to be honest. I can't think of one that's worse, given, you know, good protection, wide open receiver in the end zone. He just airmailed him completely, which is so unlike him, especially to Baldwin, who's got such a good relationship with. But yeah, he's found a way this year to knuckle down and find a rhythm when he's not being given one. That is something that annoys me. I don't think that he's being put in a position always to succeed. I think he is the ultimate rhythm quarterback for us, and it's no surprise that when he starts to throw a bit more, the throws seem to come off typically. I mean, not necessarily in this game, but I find in his career in general, when he gets a groove going, he's pretty unstoppable, and that's how it proved as the game went on. And look, fair play to him. He knuckled down and he wrestled a victory out of the jaws of defeat pretty much, you know, on his back.
Yeah, and also he did that with some pretty damn impressive throws, which is the one to Tyler Lockett, or two, I think, consecutive plays to Tyler Lockett before the Ed Dixon throw. The whole Ed Dixon play call, which Pete Carroll's talked about all week, about being something that Russell Wilson saw before the snap, and they made the most of it with a quick pass, which shows their burgeoning relationship and chemistry is all leads to us, puts us in good stead. But yeah, the Doug Baldwin throw, it's behind him, and Doug Baldwin, all it needs is a bit of a floater. He just zips it in 5 to 10 yards over Doug Baldwin's head. There was one where David Moore was, well, as I put on our group chat, that he'd have to be the actual Megatron to try and come down with it. There were just a few which were airmailed, which is unlikely and very unlike what we usually see from Russell Wilson, especially even a couple of weeks despite the losses on the scoreboard. It wasn't a vintage one, but it had what is a pretty Russell Wilson finish in the fourth quarter. Obviously, the main benefactor from all that, as it has been for quite often in 2018, was Tyler Lockett. Adam, 5 catches on 5 targets, 71 yards, including that late fourth quarter 34-yard grab, which probably wasn't a catch, was it? Because it bounced off the ground a little bit. But we've had a few missed calls. But Tyler Lockett again, and he's talked this week about how he's been given more freedom by Schottenheimer. He can improv more when he's running his routes and stuff, which, and if that's the case, then his game and his contract status and the worth of that is paying off for him, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we've said a few times this season that, okay, it's great having two catches for 43 yards and a touchdown, but that's not necessarily what you're looking for from a $10 million receiver. And actually, although this is, I think, the first game this season he hasn't scored a touchdown, his impact on the game was as big as ever before, if not bigger, because he was making chain moving catches and game deciding plays that, all right, you don't get 6 points for them, but you kind of do with the Ed Dixon one, because without those two catches you don't get the touchdown. So whilst he didn't show up in the scorebook for a touchdown, this is probably his most impactful performance of the season so far, and if he can keep doing that, then he'll prove everyone that doubted him, me included, very much wrong.
Yeah, and outside of him, the 1-2 punch at the wide receiver position is going to be, for, you'd hope, the next few years, Lockett and Doug Baldwin, number 89, appears back to his best, 7 catches on 10 targets, 52 yards. And somewhat amazingly, it was a week before Thanksgiving, and it was his first touchdown on the season, obviously dealing with some injury and health issues for the first 2 months. But, I mean, the touchdown pass was something, but the catch and the route that Doug Baldwin ran is vintage DB89, isn't it?
Brian Baldinger is an absolute must follow on Twitter, I would say. He breaks down tape better than anyone else, and he does it in a very funny and dramatic style. And on Friday morning, he had the chance to really break down what Baldwin was doing, and he did 3 or 4 minutes or a couple of minutes on 5 or 6 routes that Baldwin ran. It is quite incredible how talented he is at losing his guy with, you know, he fames himself on using basketball style moves and the way he can step in and out of a route. And there's one route where he's running forward to take the defender away, then he runs an out, and then he turns back upfield. And I think it's against Jair Alexander. And Alexander is going to be a defensive star, but Baldwin just takes him to the cleaners on that. His route running is truly special. And it's one of those things that as I've watched more of the game and picked up more of an appreciation of the finer points of the game, it's something I absolutely love watching. He's just so clean in what he does.
Yeah, there's some examples. I think someone who's obviously good at video editing or whatever, they need to put a basketball in some of the routes that the Baldwin runs, because how he uses his hands and uses his arms and uses his upper body, it looks like he's making a basketball move. He looks like Nate Robinson or Steph Curry just taking a step back for a fade. It is so, so cool, and it clearly works. And it's in a mimic league. I can't really think of anyone who uses the footwork like Doug Baldwin does to the level of success that and healthy Doug Baldwin does. It's really, really impressive. And it's a good thing as the Seahawks in this season rolls on into a pretty important stretch that they have their most reliable receiver over the last 5-6 years back pretty much full power, isn't it?
100%. He is the X factor on the offense outside of the quarterback. Whoever else is out there, he's got the best relationship with Wilson. He runs the best routes. He's the most experienced guy. And, you know, it would be ridiculous to suggest that his impact there isn't of crucial importance.
Yeah, it's huge. It is quite fun to see, and just so reliable. Once you see 89 is the target in any way, which way you can, you kind of expect the ball to be caught and the chains to be moved. Obviously, the running game was a big part on last Thursday night. Chris Carson found the end zone again, 83 yards on 17 attempts. But it was the usage, especially in the first half before, I think he did get injured. I think that's why that's the pass I'm giving the play call on that one. Rashad Penny, 8 rushes for 46 yards, when really it was 8 rushes for about 1,000 miles, isn't it? With that ridiculously long, entertaining and heart-murmuring-juicing run in the first half, Adam.
Yeah, I thought it was going to go down 3 times, and all of a sudden I thought it was going to score. There's a game that on the iPhone or like in the App Store called Ted Ginn Kickoff Returns, and it's basically like mapping out these ridiculous returns, and you're overmatched against better defenders than you are that are quicker, and so you almost have to draw like figures of 8 to get round these guys into the end zone. And that's watching Penny. It was almost like I was controlling him on this stupid game with my finger, like taking him all the way to the right and all the way to the left. It does sound like Wilson had a chat with him afterwards and said, hey, that's not always going to work. and Penny himself has said, if I'm not mistaken, that he knows he needs to stop bouncing outside because it's not really what the team are looking for him to do. So I guess, you know, any excuse to take the fun out of what the Seahawks are doing by the coaching staff, I'm sure they'll try and do that.
But I think Penny said that he can do it the other way. It must be a confidence thing with a rookie. He's basically 9 weeks into his NFL career, isn't he? Yeah. With all the injuries he's had in preseason, so it must be a confidence and just another case of getting his feet even more under him, which is he's clearly shown a progress towards over the last 2 weeks. But yeah, the Seahawks yet again though ran for over 100 yards on the night, 35 attempts, 173 yards, extends the franchise record of consecutive games with over 100 yards. This is the bread and butter, that O line. With number 78 back in at right guard, it makes the lanes, for most of the game, made the lanes with somewhat ease against a pretty quiet interior, and what ended up being a pretty dinged up interior defensive line for the Packers, with Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels not actually finishing the game, Adam.
Yeah, losing Mike Daniels was a massive blow for Green Bay, because he is probably second to Aaron Donald, a guy that just eats up on the Seahawks whenever he sees them, gets the opportunity to do it. So him being, I think he was out for the whole second half. Is that right?
If not, he was limited then out. Like, fine. he was, he wasn't an every down presence, let's say.
So, I mean, yeah, it's no surprise that the offense improved as we went on in the second half. We were largely untroubled on offense, really. So, yeah, I mean, that was a huge help. And, yeah, they were pretty banged up defense, the Green Bay guys. But look, everyone's going to get injured at some point, or, you know, you're going to be more injured than other teams at some point. And if you kind of make apologies for the other team being injured and winning, then you'll never go anywhere. So you might as well just say, yeah, they were injured, we won, took advantage of it. Thanks very much.
Yeah, but also there is, with all the praise and the rest of it with the O-line, someone put on Twitter, someone called Johnny Kinsley posted on Twitter a couple of days ago that over the last 5 weeks, quarterback hits allowed, the Seahawks are still towards the bottom on this with 25 quarterback hits in the last 5 weeks. Detroit and Tampa Bay with 31, Oakland with 27, the Seahawks, Chiefs and Packers then with 25. And the other end of it, we'll get onto a bit later, Indianapolis and Andrew Luck have been hit 3 times in 5 weeks, which is just remarkable. So while it's an improving unit, there are still some troubling deficiencies, or is that being overly harsh on what is an improving group?
Do you know what? Like, I think if you'd said any other two teams, it would concern me more. But Wilson, Rodgers and Mahomes, unless I'm forgetting anyone, I'm not going to put Cam in here because Cam is a quarterback who has designed runs. Those three quarterbacks are probably the three most, with Trubisky probably, who look down the field and see what they can do and escape to make plays. Yeah. And yeah. I think, you know, listen to what Dwayne Brown said when he came over from Houston. He said, you know, it's just different trying to block for a quarterback like Wilson, because you don't know exactly what the angles are going to be. So it doesn't stun me that those three have got the most hits, because you don't really know where those quarterbacks are going to be at any one time. So maybe that works as a small excuse. Matt, I heard someone, who was it? I think it was Ross Tucker, who was doing an interview, saying that Nate Solder's not been a great success in New York yet, because with Brady, he expected Brady always to step up into the pocket. So his speciality was like allowing a speed rush to go past him, because Brady would step up away from it.
Yeah.
But because Eli doesn't do that, because their guards aren't very good, it's making Nate Solder look worse. So I think a lot of that is probably the quarterback, you know, almost causing his own hits. And yeah, if you'd said two other teams, I'd be a lot more concerned. But I don't think it's necessarily something to worry about too much.
Yeah, it's probably the biggest surprise, was just next to how low that Colts number is that the fact the second team on that list, Adam, is the Cleveland Browns, with just 8. I mean, I can't even name one Cleveland Brown offensive lineman. Petonio, is he playing, actually?
I have absolutely no idea.
That is pretty impressive to see that turnaround in that offense, but also not at all surprising with what Baker Mayfield said about this format coach earlier today, which we'll go on a bit later. Defensively, though, we said last week on the podcast, the biggest thing this to kind of quell or stop as best as we could Aaron Rodgers from doing Aaron Rodgers things on a more consistent basis. What he did last Thursday was pass rushing 5 sacks on last Thursday. Clark is really eyeing the team record, 16 and a half sacks on the season. He's now at 10 and a half, I believe. Jacob Martin and Rasheen Green became the first Seahawks rookies to get their first NFL sack in the same game since Bobby Wagner, and someone else did it. I think Corey Toomer maybe did it in 2012. And then obviously Jaron Reed, who we spent the offseason talking about how he needs to improve and find a way to the quarterback more often and not just be a premier run defender, is doing that and now has 5.5, if not 6 sacks, if that second sack is actually properly awarded to him, which I think Pete Carroll has sent a request to do that off to the league. But we asked for it, we got it, especially in the second half, and especially Adam on third down, which is probably the one that, if not first down or third down, is where you want to get to the quarterback most often, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, without over-egging the pudding, I think a lot of the NFL is going to change on the back of what happened on Monday night between the Rams and the Chiefs. I think it's going to be a revolutionary game. And if it showed you anything, it's that, yeah, defense is obviously important, but the most important thing you can do on defense is destroy drives, whether that be with turnovers or with sacks. The idea of like the run stuffing defender, there isn't really going to be a future for that player at the high level of the draft anymore. Like, it's just not going to be necessary, because that's not what's going to win games. And the fact that this team all right, we're not turning the ball over, and that is an issue, because I think that's three games without a turnover in a row. But they are being able to make big splash plays, and they are sacking the quarterback at the right time. Jaron Reed has gone from a run stuffer, and he, as you say, he's got five or six sacks. I mean, that's really impressive for him, and he's looking like a guy who will definitely earn a second contract in Seattle, I'd assume. But the way in which the game's played, you need these splash plays, and I think they're doing a really good job of dialing it up. I mean, Pete Carroll always gets the credit for it being his defense, which is fine, but this defense is a million times better, in my opinion, in relation to the talent available than Chris Richard's was last year. And I think Ken Norton deserves a huge amount of credit for that.
Yeah, he does. There must be a difference in teaching and that kind of thing, but Chris Richard seemed to be just, I mean, he's now the DB coach in Dallas, and that group's not exactly setting the world alight, but Ken Norton just seems to have a different approach and way about him, which seems to fit the personalities on the defense, especially the guy in the middle of the defense, 54, doesn't it? He just seems to have more connection to this defense rather than just one position group, doesn't he? Is that fair?
Yeah, 100%. I think he is the embodiment of what Seahawk defense is, as much as Pete Carroll is. And I think obviously the players are really warming to him, and he's calling great schemes. Look, they're young and they're inexperienced, and in general they're fairly low on what you would call obvious NFL talent, but within that they're doing a brilliant job.
They are. Obviously within that defense, Shaquille Griffin and Trey Flowers probably had their biggest test to date in the 2018 season, and they both had one play which we'd obviously want to not see on their game film for the rest of the season. But, I mean, Davante Adams, I mean, he's better and more trouble than I probably give him credit for a week ago, Adam. He really did test those two young DBs, especially Trey Flowers, who's, as Pete Carroll says, his first time experiencing that level and that consistent amount of issues he had with the former Fresno State guy.
I was, without wanting to out him for lack of professionalism, I was talking via text with Mike Dugar during the game. A couple of things cropped up, and he messaged me saying that Davante Adams is something like he's never seen a receiver like it. Just the way in which he moves, how smooth he is, the catch is just incredible. And, you know, even to the point where he was, you know, just saying that he's on that field, he's as good as a guy as he's ever seen. And I think that's probably worth taking into consideration, in addition to the fact that Rodgers at the minute is kind of, I don't know, he's making remarkable plays from stuff that you wouldn't expect, and then making pretty bad plays from stuff that you would expect to be fairly routine. And I think the way him and Adams have got such a great relationship going deep, and they're massively in sync. And the fact that, you know, Adams had a great game, but the fact that he wasn't able to win them the game, I guess I'd see as a bonus for the way in which the secondary played.
Yeah, that's fair. Also, coming out of the game, there's been a lot of talk in, I mean, Packers Twitter is, I think, as lit after a defeat as Seahawks Twitter is over the last few weeks. But there seems to be a lot of pressure. Well, there was moved into game, but that the seat is getting warmer under Mike McCarthy. Got the right one this week. And Aaron Rodgers kind of seems a little bit off if you look at the All 22, but he's still Aaron Rodgers. I mean, there's three throws in that game which are just absolutely absurd. And obviously the touchdown to that tight end from, like, some Division III school. The throw to Aaron Jones,
who he thought was Jimmy Graham.
yeah. And also the long catch to Davante Adams, which was just placed perfectly, and Davante Adams was getting interfered with by Shaquille Griffin and still managed to cling on. I mean, for those three throws, he wasn't vintage, as much as Wilson wasn't vintage Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers definitely wasn't vintage Rodgers, was he, for the most part?
No, I mean, from all you read, from people that know a lot more about it than I do, there is the idea that Rodgers is maybe not exactly at his peak that he wasn't. I mean, that, you know, as an age thing, he's just not as good as he was 3 or 4 years ago, which I guess is to be expected. But he's still got the ability to do more than any other quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, his ceiling is still higher than any others, even someone like Mahomes, who's capable of the ridiculous so regularly. Rodgers is still, I don't know, there's something about playing against him which is just terrifying every time he touches the ball.
Yeah, it is. You want to get the game out of his hands, and we did that enough with that effective run game. A few stats coming out of the game. When contacted inside of 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage, Seahawks running back Chris Carson averages an NFL high 3.25 yards a carry. Doug Baldwin with 7 catches against the Packers has passed John Williams for third place in franchise history with 473 catches. If you go on Pro Football Reference, go to receiving records all time for the Seahawks. Doug Baldwin is third or fourth in pretty much every single category, and that's going to be, you'd hope that he's going to at least get close to Steve Largent. I mean, some of the Largent records are just unfathomable. Then I don't think that Mr. Baldwin will have a chance to reach that, because Largent was just on a different plane. But it is quite cool to see so many of this current era at the top of these charts, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, it's awesome. We're fortunate to be living and talking and watching the greatest era of the team's history. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not always going to be like this. And so even though it's fine now, whereas it was great 3 or 4 years ago, you've still got to appreciate what we've got, because it's still better than a lot of teams have got it. And many teams would rip their arms off to trade.
Yeah, most definitely. And also one other thing on the top of Seahawks records and all the rest of it. Russell Wilson with that win last, as stupid as QB wins are, Russell Wilson now has 70 regular season wins as a Seahawks quarterback, tying the franchise record. So that's something to watch at the end of Sunday's game. And talking of Sunday's game, we'll now move on as the Seahawks face a familiar non-divisional foe on the road.
Second and 4. Again, time. Near side, intercepted! It's intercepted by Chancellor! Touchdown!
Yeah, so moving on, the Seahawks are back on the road again, and they head off down to Charlotte and to face Cam Newton, Christian McCaffrey, and the Carolina Panthers. This Sunday's game, as Ben Baldwin tweeted earlier today, has a ridiculous amount of percentage swing in playoff odds. The Seahawks are 47% swing in playoff odds at stake, and the Panthers have a ridiculous 46%. It is, with all that happened on Sunday, which was a pretty good Sunday for the Seahawks without even taking the field, but this is a big, big time game, isn't it, with playoff implications which probably didn't seem likely a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it's funny. I keep saying, like, you know, if the Seahawks beat Carolina, then they've got their own destiny in their own hands. Well, that kind of means that we have destiny in our own hands now.
Right now, yeah.
You know, if we win out and it's in the playoffs, I mean, that would be a ridiculously good achievement, going 11-5 and winning your last 7 games or whatever. But this is a massive game. I kind of had everything on the Vikings game before this, just assuming this would be a loss. But the Panthers have shown a little bit of frailty in the last 2 weeks. I don't think Cam Newton is 100% healthy, which can only be to our benefit. And this might be an opportunity after like a mini bye to go in there and do some damage and maybe cause probably the biggest upset we could do this season for ourselves, with outside of if we've beaten the Rams.
Yeah, I mean, they lost on Sunday in Detroit. They got absolutely pounded by the Steelers and Juju Smith-Schuster the Thursday night prior 2 weeks ago in Pittsburgh. But before that, this Carolina team, you just take a quick look at their stats, this is all about Cam and Christian, isn't it, for the Panthers?
Yeah, and actually Aaron Jones looked really dangerous at times on the dump offs, and Christian McCaffrey, I would say him and Alvin Kamara are Kareem, you've got Kareem Hunt as well. Just if you as soon as the ball's in their hands, it could be a touchdown from anywhere on the field. They're just incredible talents, and that's a big worry for me on Sunday.
Yeah, Christian McCaffrey has 60 catches with nearly 500 yards and 4 touchdowns in the air, and 632 yards and 4 touchdowns on the ground. Both were 4.5 yard clip on the ground and 8.3 yards per catch. But Cam Newton, he's having, apart from before the last couple of weeks, he was having quite a quietly impressive run of it, wasn't he, in 2018? I mean, he hasn't set the world alight, but he's been doing things, especially on the ground again, where not many quarterbacks in this league can do to the level he does do it at as well.
Yeah, I don't know what you think about this, but the more I read and think about it and watch him, I think he's an absolute lock for the Hall of Fame.
stuff.
Oh yeah, and if he doesn't get like a career altering injury, if he carries on at this clip, all he needs to get in Hall of Fame, I think, is that if Kurt Warner can get in with just one ring, Cam Newton's going to get in one ring, because he is. Like, I mean, everyone talks about Russell Wilson, and Drew Brees obviously does it differently to Russell Wilson being below the height threshold, but how Cam Newton plays, the size he is, and how his arm is just ridiculous as well.
He might be the greatest ever feet. Red zone threat in the NFL.
I don't know. Gronkowski's a real thing. Tony Gonzalez was pretty good back in the day as well.
Okay, so maybe inside the 5 meter. There may never have been a bigger threat. He
can literally do everything. He could throw the fade to the back of the end zone. He could gun it in to the tight end, Greg Olsen, in the middle, or he can just lunge. And he can also take the bootleg into the corner end zone and go on a merry dance all through the first row of Bank of America Stadium. He literally can do everything. I know a lot of people neg on him because of all of his Inspector Gadget outfits and wardrobe and everything, but that means absolutely nothing to the Hall of Fame. I'm going to consider how he dresses, because Ray Lewis is in the Hall of Fame, so come on. if you said I can watch one quarterback, he's going to be one quarterback play the game at the very peak of his powers. Cam Newton's going to be near the top of that list to the current 32, isn't he?
100%. And yeah, look, all those things you said, what you need to hope is that you catch him on the day where he misses all of that stuff, and that's probably the only reason he hasn't got a ring already, because he has probably one too many off days a season that can be very important. And, you know, on Sunday against Detroit, he misses Jairus Wright pretty wide open in the middle of the end zone, 8 yards in front of him. So I guess that's what you need to do, and, you know, get him off his spot and try and make him feel uncomfortable. He's not a guy that loves getting whacked. We know that.
No.
And he's not a guy that loves being behind if the chips are down or against him. We know that as well. So that's probably the two things for the team to focus on. But, you know, if he's hot, there's not really that much you can do to stop him, to be honest.
No, he's thrown 20 touchdowns so far this season with just 6 interceptions. He's also ran in for 4 more touchdowns with 350 yards. He's run the ball 77 times, Cam Newton has. He's a quarterback. But yeah, the thing with Cam Newton, I keep saying, gets a lot of negative press. Some of it he deserves, where he called out the reporter a few years ago in Carolina, Francis, a pretty legitimate question. But Cam Newton, for the past, I don't know, 10, 12 years of his life, has done nothing but win. He won at high school, he went to Duke, and he won there, and he went to Auburn and won the national title. He then gets to Carolina and wins Rookie of the Year, then he takes him to the Super Bowl. All he knows is winning. So when he's not winning, I mean, we've had all the clips of Russell Wilson go, I hate losing. Cam Newton just does that. He just expresses that in a different way. I mean, this is kind of becoming the Cam Newton defense podcast, but never mind.
Well, he's also one of the few quarterbacks in the league that came into the league with the level of expectation that, he's definitely... Yeah. Like, even Deshaun Watson, who torched Alabama twice in the college football, he came in with people doubting his physicality, whether he could do it. Cam came in, and it was expected that he was going to be incredible. And with same as LeBron in basketball, and, you know, to exceed expectations is a pretty amazing achievement.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back over top 5 quarterback picks, obviously forgetting this class because it's clearly Mayfield's the best of that bunch. But if you go back from when Cam Newton came in the league, whoever, it's 2011, I think Cam Newton was number 1 pick. Andrew Luck, probably he's had a couple of down years, but he looks like he's back to it. It's him and Luck, and the rest are kind of struggling. Obviously, you've got Jameis Winston, who could be out of the league in a couple of years. Marcus Mariota's having his struggles.
Are you talking about first-round picks?
Well, like top 5 quarterbacks.
Got you.
So, like, you've got Carson Wentz, who is not having a great year of it or time of it in Philadelphia, despite all the weapons he's got on the offensive side of the ball. Cam Newton and Andrew Luck are the only two, really, even probably further back than that as well. You think of Sam Bradford and people at as you said, he kind of had expectations for how dominant he was for Auburn all through his college career, the few stops he had, but he hasn't really missed a step. He hasn't missed a beat apart from one or two missteps, as I said, with journalists and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times you get people saying, you know, if you could redraft, would you still take XYZ? He's probably the only first-round quarterback since 2011 that, you know, because even Andrew Luck was injured for such a long time.
Yeah.
The Colts might think, well, not sure. Luck, Newton, you wouldn't get a single shred of doubt from anyone.
No.
He's probably the only one like that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's pretty impressive. And, yeah, it will be interesting to see how the rest of his career go after Sunday. One of his non-Christian McCaffrey weapons is the impressive first-round pick from this year, rookie wide receiver DJ Moore. And if you want to have a look at DJ Moore's box score, as I texted you a couple of days ago, Adam, if you want to look at the weeks where DJ Moore did nothing, that was the week I started him in fantasy. If you want to look at the weeks where DJ Moore exploded, that was the week I didn't start him or I got rid of him. He's a free agent. It has been so annoying, but he's also very much fun to watch. And he's, again, he's somewhat of an unknown quantity to many Seahawks fans, but he's got 30 catches for 474 yards and he's 16 yards a catch, just the two touchdowns. But he can do it all at wide receiver position, even with McCaffrey and Curtis Samuel and everyone else they've got. He's going to be an issue on Sunday, isn't he?
Yeah, you've got players like him and Juju and Calvin Ridley, like these big body guys that are comfortable over the middle, that seem to catch the ball in space and just pick up incredible speed, like they just are able to get from 0 to 60 so quickly. And I think Moore's first touchdown, I can't recall which team it was against, it's really annoying me, but he picks the ball up and he makes it look like he's in fast forward and the defenders on the field are in half speed. He absolutely guns past them.
Yeah, and he almost did it last Sunday as well, but he got caught up by someone on just last week or the week before. Last week, he had another 70-plus yard touchdown, and he got caught on like the 15, I think. But yeah, he's a fun receiver to watch and could be an issue this week. On the other, also for this Carolina offense, their O-line has some issues, and even if it wasn't for Cam's mobility, this is a team which is looking at a top five pick every year, really, because they haven't really fixed it, even by splashing the catch outside, really, possibly of Trey Turner, who's the guard who I kind of wanted a few years ago for the Seahawks to draft, but they picked the other guy, Mark Glinski. But that O-line, it's with the confidence clearly you'd expect coming from the Seahawks pass rush after last week. That could be pretty imperative again, not just to get to Cam, but to keep him at least somewhat restrained, Adam.
Yeah, I think with Cam, you almost worry about sacks second and just worry about containing him first.
Yeah. But it's probably exactly the same with Wilson as well, isn't it, on the other side of the ball?
Yeah, it is. It'll be interesting because I think Carolina, for the first time, I mean, they did this obviously in 2015, but they kind of worked out, I think, with Cam that the best talent to surround him with is speed and a lot of it. And you've got McCaffrey, you've got DJ Moore, you've got KJ Carter-Samuel, or is that one of them is the ex-Husky quarterback and the other one's the Carolina wide receiver? I can never remember which one's which.
Curtis Samuel.
That's the one.
Yeah.
So he's there as well, and they've got so much speed that it's going to be I'm not sure we've played a team yet this season that's got this style of speed and so much of it on offense. So it's going to be interesting to see how we do. And I think the defensive line, they've just got to try and set the edge as best as possible because they cannot allow McCaffrey to, you know, explode outside and Cam to get outside them, because that's when it's really going to be problematic.
Yeah, on the defensive side, though, this is a defense which you start from front and go to the back. It gets the experiences up front, and the inexperience and the youth, like the Seahawks, is at the back end in the secondary. And obviously, they've got probably the second best middle linebacker over the last 5 or 6 years in the NFL, Luke Kuechly, who's, again, getting to the quarterback a couple of times this year, but also just a tackling machine. 83 tackles on the season for Kuechly. And he, along with Thomas Davis, this is a gnarly veteran experienced group at that linebacker spot, with also former Husky Shaq Thompson, Adam.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. They always seem very well coached defensively, and it says a lot that, you know, even when we were at our best and Carolina probably weren't such a great side, they always played us so tough. I mean, Rivera and Pete Carroll have always been close games. You think of the Luke Wilson touchdown a couple of years ago, Jermaine Kearse to open the previous season, the ridiculous playoff game we had there a couple of years ago. It's never easy down there. And I think a lot of that starts with how well coached they are defensively. And they haven't got Pete Carroll's number because our win to loss record is better than over them than them over us. But I know that they know how to play us.
Yeah, definitely. The Seahawks are currently in the top 10 for pressure percentage at 30.2%. The Rams, obviously, with Aaron Donald, even though he's double teamed, like I think it's every 3 out of 4 snaps or something, double teamed 3 out of 4 snaps or something completely ludicrous.
Yeah, 72% of the plays.
37.2% pass rate. So that is pretty impressive from a group which we haven't didn't really expect much and didn't really think we'll see much from as a unit, are getting to the quarterback at a pretty heady rate. Are you confident? I mean, this is obviously it's going to be a tough out on Sunday, but are you confident for Sunday?
I'm confident we're not going to get waxed, which is what I thought was going to happen 2 weeks ago.
That's what I thought was going to happen on Friday morning.
So I'm confident that we'll put up at least a respectable score, and the way in which the offense are playing, if they can maintain drives and keep them long and, you know, stay on the field for a long time, it's going to be difficult for a team to beat us massively because they're just not going to have enough time with the ball to do it. So I'm fairly confident that we'll keep it at least close, but I do think Carolina have the edge on us overall. I think they're a slightly better team, and so I think we are probably going to lose this one, to be honest.
Yeah, last week's podcast, I said I didn't want to mention something because I didn't want to jinx it. That was the fact that the Green Bay Packers hadn't won on the road so far, and still haven't, obviously, in 2018. But this week, I'm going to go the opposite and try and jinx it because the Carolina Panthers have not lost at home this year, beating the Cowboys, the Bengals, the Giants, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 3 weeks ago. They are, as you say, a pretty tough out. I think we're going to be, it's going to be another one score kind of Chargers, Rams kind of, maybe as hot, 30-30 as like it was against the Rams, but this is going to be another, it's going to come down to the last drive and it's going to come up just short, I think. This is a tough defense who match up pretty well against us just as well as we do, and it's going to be a bit of a tough ask for that secondary, and KJ Wright's absence is going to be quite annoying, I think. So confidence is raised a bit after how they played against the Lions on Sunday, but yeesh, I'm not too sure this is going to go well for the Seahawks. Well, I'd happily be wrong. One to watch for the Seahawks on the other side of the ball, Adam?
One to watch. I think I'm going to go with, well, Ed Dixon's obviously got his revenge match against the Panthers. But I'm going to say that David Moore has a big game and comes back with 6 catches for 90 yards and a touch.
Oh, I like that. Is that his redemption for the Hall of Fame, Adam?
David? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think on the offensive side, I just kind of want to keep just the ball. We keep getting our ball on third down and all that kind of stuff will be important. I think, as you mentioned, Christian McCaffrey come out of the backfield, Austin Kleatro or Michael Kendricks, who's rejoined the team again this week, they have to play out of their skin. Kleatro found the ball with regularity, found the ball carrier regularity at last Thursday night. He's kind of got to do that, but even quicker against Christian McCaffrey, who was just a ridiculous player and one of your favourite players in college all the time you've been watching that.
Yeah.
Sports, Adam. So, yeah, I think Kalicho's got a lot on his plate and he's going to be the main guy to key in on the defensive side. So moving on, before we welcome on our guest this week, it's time for another spin in the bin.
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and Mike, and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
Yes, this week's getting in the bin. I've got a couple, Adam, so I'm going to leave the floor open for you, your guys, or guy, or gal, or person, or team, or brand in the bin this week.
I've got a group of people that I can't necessarily call out names. There's a few that I can put names to. There's Mike Zimmer, there's Brian Schottenheimer, there's Ron Rivera, I believe he can go in. It's all the people that after Monday night's game are, you know, taking great pride and giving it the, I tell you, that kind of game's not for me.
Like the NFL coach equivalent of the four Yorkshiremen.
Yeah, 54-51. Whoa, that's not my type of game. No, sir. I like 7-6. I like defense. I like rushing the ball. You are more than entitled to think what you want to think and, you know, have your style and whatever. But if you can't watch that and appreciate that that's the way the game's going, because it absolutely is, and then if you need extra proof, the three best teams by a mile in the NFL, if you asked anyone who they are, anyone that watches any of it, they are all going to give you the same three answers. The Saints, the Rams, and the Chiefs in some kind of order of that. They all play to score at least, you know, they're all on averaging 35 points a game or whatever. So this idea that, not for me, no, we're going to run the ball and play defense. That's not the way the game's going. So anyone like that that is, you know, pretending outwardly to not appreciate what they've been watching, you can get right in the bin.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree, especially the ones closest to our heart. Miss Mike Zimmer saying that. I'm not surprised, although he has a bit of a quarterback.
Like, who's Mike Zimmer to say that?
Exactly.
How'd your defense go in the championship game last year against a good offense? Oh no, you got smoked.
Yeah.
And actually, sorry, one other. Bucky Brooks as well. On Twitter last week was, or on Tuesday, was saying, yeah, you know, as much as they want to score points, all the elite teams know they can't win a shootout. And someone responded, it's cool that everyone slept through the Super Bowl last year. that was the indicator. This is the way it was going. And I just think it's just ridiculous to just suggest that that's not what the game's future is going to be, because it so patently is. And it may not be for more than 3 or 4 years, but right now, that's what it is.
Yeah, because like three or four years ago, it was Colin Kaepernick, Cam Newton, Russell Wilson, RG3, that doing that reach and stuff. That's kind of got faded away. Obviously, there's a few amendments to it, but that was a big thing for an offseason. Then it kind of went, okay, we find a way to stop that. That's what it's just going to come back around. It's going to come back around where defensive coaches. It's going to have to be the defensive coach. He's going to find a way to scheme against it, no matter how impossible it seems. But at the same time, it's you got to enjoy it, which is a perfect segue into mine, because I kind of just want to put anyone who said that those two teams on Monday night haven't got the defense to win a Super Bowl, or anyone who said, oh, I'd much rather see, as you say, a defensive game. It's just absolute bull. Baloney. It's just absolute nonsense. I think Matt Michaelis, who on 950 KJR Slickhawk, he made a great point. Like the fact that this is going to be the future, this is going to happen every week. Now the fact that made the reason it was so much fun to watch that, and it was just ludicrous fun. One of my friends who's a Rams fan texts me when the Chiefs got the ball back with 34 seconds or whatever it was, we've given them too much time. That's just a ludicrous thing to text with 30 seconds to go in a game, but that's kind of what it was. And as Matt said on Twitter, it's the reason it was so exciting, the reason it was so enjoyable to watch, is because it hasn't been the norm for the NFL. Yeah, it might be the norm, as you say, Adam, but it hasn't been the norm. It felt and seemed like a complete one-off. And we see over this side of the pond with all the Premier League and how Sky just pump up every game between teams 200, 300 miles away, and more often than not, they're dull, blowout, just absolute nonsensical games. And for once, the league pumped this game up for weeks. I mean, during the Monday Night Football game before that, they were talking about this game. It's just got so much hype, and it lived up to it, and it was just ludicrous. And the people are just kind of negging on that. Oh, I'd much rather do that. I'd much rather watch a defensive battle. No, you wouldn't, because like 16 or whatever Darren Valtwit, the audience figure, was, watched that game. It was a massive hike over last year. And also, if you don't want to watch the game, there's plenty of people watching, because ESPN said their ratings so far are 20% up, I think it is, on the 2017 figures, which is just a ludicrous hike for a primetime game, which was already probably the most watched of all of them on the NFL schedule. It was just absolute nonsense. It's really annoying.
And also, like, by Matt. like the Dolphins aren't going to start scoring 54 points because that's where the NFL's going. Like, it's not like going to be the norm that every team's doing this, but this is what the best teams do. And if you want to be the best team, this is what you're going to have to try and do. But the idea that, like, right, Rivera's moaning about the rule changes making all the difference. Well, if that was the case, you know, teams like the Bills would be scoring 35 every week, but they're not.
Yeah, it's doing a disservice to Sean McVay, Andy Reid. I mean, Andy Reid is now on his, sixth, seventh different starting quarterback in his career. And if you look at the quarterbacks, McNabb, you have Vic in Philadelphia, he's had Smith and now Mahomes. There's not like a structure or like a mold to an Andy Reid quarterback, but there is a mold to the offense. And when you have someone, he's a little wild, especially a few times on Monday. When you have someone like Mahomes, he's so much fun to watch. He has been the whole time. It's doing the service to the coaches coaching. I mean, it's doing the service to Sean McVay, who's just, I mean, who the hell is Josh Reynolds? Who the hell is Samson Ebukam or whatever his name was? These are guys who had no draft coverage and they're coming up big in systems and positions which are there to benefit them more intently than the others. And it's just, you just gotta stand up, applaud, and enjoy it while it lasts, as you say, because it's probably not gonna, it's gonna come back around the other way and defenses are gonna clue up and clue in on it. Because it is a college football way of approaching the scoreboard. 51-54, the first time ever a team has scored 50 and lost, and obviously it was a scoring army as well. It's gonna come back around because college teams are now going to draft to find a way. Daniel Jeremiah tweeted out, it seems pretty spot on, the what teams are going to target in the next couple of years through the draft or through free agency, and how a team is now going to be built. I mean, we've seen it with quarterbacks where it's all about getting a rookie deal. You've seen it with the Rams, especially with Jared Goff, making the most of that window. You've seen the opposite in Dallas, where they just completely wasted that window they had with Dak Prescott. So there's been different ways every year of building the team. This is just this year's and probably next couple of years' way of building the team. And there's, as you say, there's three teams far and away out in front of anyone else currently, even with a league with Bill Belichick still in it. He's isn't able to do it with a 49-year-old quarterback. But yeah, also talking of that game, just for a few comparisons to that, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had more yards against the Washington Redskins than the LA Rams did against the Chiefs on Monday night a couple of weeks ago. The Bucs scored 3, the Rams scored 54, and the Rams scoring 54 in 60 minutes of football on Monday night. That was the same amount of points that the 2016 Rams scored in their final 5 games. I mean, it's just absurd. All the stats coming out of that game. It had, what was it, 3 defensive... Well, let's talk about no defense. It had 3 defensive scores, 8 sacks, and I think 7 turnovers on Monday night. It had defense. It just had ridiculously explosive and short drives. I think the first 5 Kansas City drives, I think the longest drive was 7 plays.
Which the Rams is just, had 15 drives.
Yeah, and they punted more than I think they have in like 5 weeks as well.
Yeah, they have.
It's just incredible. And also the other team you mentioned, that the New Orleans Saints did an absolute number on the Philadelphia Eagles. On the season, the New Orleans Saints are somewhat bizarre. 11 of 12, which is 92% on 4th down, which is just ridiculous. That's like an all or nothing going. They've gone for it, not only have they gone for it 12 times in 10 games or whatever, they've completed it 11 times. Also, quickly, before I forget, the other guy I want to put in the bin this week, Cougars, I think their nickname is in college football, Major Applewhite. He can get in the bin this week because in this week's edition of College Coaches Are the Weirdest Creatures in the World, Ed Oliver, the star defensive lineman, defensive end, sat out the game they played last week. I can't remember who they played. And at halftime got into a pretty lively skirmish with his head coach, because his head coach decided that the jacket Ed Oliver was wearing was meant for those who were active or playing the game and not for someone who was sitting out, which is the most ridiculous thing ever and the most just mind trip from a college just idiot college coach, really. And after the game, he just kind of answered in all seriousness, he shouldn't be wearing it because he wasn't playing, so I took it off him. I mean, come on, college coaches, man. just the absolute worst. Other NFL stuff, I mean, mentioned the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they've made another quarterback change. I mean, what on earth is happening there?
Well, I've actually got, we don't do a lot of fantasy on this show, but I have got a great fantasy tip for anyone that's a bit of a maverick, bit of a, you know, and backs himself in a big spot. You need to start in fantasy football the quarterback that the Buccaneers do not start on Sundays.
Yeah, because was Jameson 4 touchdown drives?
Jameis got 4 touchdowns. That's 16 points just on touchdowns, let alone the yards he accumulated. You got Fitzmagic did it against Carolina as well. This is the way to play it. You've got to start the quarterback who does not start for the Bucks, and then all of your dreams will come true.
Yeah, it's just Dirk Cutter is just. He's just running around in quicksand, and he's trying to
think. Why is he still there?
Makes absolutely no sense. I mean, they put a lot of money on. Well, Jameis Winston was the top. Was the first pick, wasn't he, Jameis?
Yeah.
And he's just not done anything. It's just a strange situation. Do you get any questions from guys and gals listening, Adam, this week?
We got one about if we can be played on Alexa, which I think.
How do we do that?
I have no idea. I think probably through Spotify or something like that. Yeah, way too technical for us bozos. We also got a question about which position group you're maybe most worried about on the team in general.
Oh, that's a good one. Probably linebackers, because it literally just looks like it's Bobby Wagner and nobody. I mean, Shaquin Griffin has played 47 snaps, I think. Someone tweeted out over the weekend, 44 of them came in week one. Mm. Defensive side of the ball. I mean, he clearly has his limitations, which we kind of expected to a certain extent. Obviously, KJ Wright, that knee does not sound like it's going to allow him to play at the level KJ Wright wants to and did in the past. Michael Kendricks, I mean, he could be going to jail in January. Austin Kleitro is a pretty limited player, although he's a pretty effective role player, kind of Brock Coyle. They need, as I think Rob Staton pointed out, they've said a couple of years ago, invest in a linebacker group. This is probably the year to do it. There's a couple of good guys who could be in the sweet spot in the draft. Obviously, the guy at LSU could be the most prominent one, but he's probably going to go early and see what's going to pick now. But
can you really, though, having discussed all about the Rams and the Chiefs and whatever, can you really look at yourself in the mirror and go and draft an inside linebacker in the first round?
Probably not. It's probably going to be defensive end. I mean, although Rob, as he said in this podcast a few weeks ago, he's massively into anyone on the defensive line coming into this draft class. I mean, quarterback is just an absolute sham at this point. If you want a quarterback in 2019, I'm sorry, lads. It's not going to work out for you, most likely. But yeah, you know, it would be a bit boring, but they need to find a way to invest in that position, because they haven't, for, as Rob said, for years, for probably quite clearly too long, because they're kind of a lot. I mean, if Michael Kendricks wasn't trying to be Bobby Axelrod, he would still be in Cleveland or probably still in Philadelphia. But because he kind of watched one too many episodes on a binge on Showtime go, he's in Seattle. So it's not going to fall into your lap. They need to invest in that position, don't they? That's probably the position most glaringly in need of replenishment, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think if anyone is in free agency that leaps off the page. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney is the defensive guy that I've got my eyes on, that if you can get hold of him, that would make a huge difference. But he's not really in a 3-4, in a 4-3. He's not going to play linebacker, he wouldn't have thought.
Unless they turn Javon Clowney into like how they use Michael Bennett, it doesn't really, fit. I'm not too sure. Yeah, he's definitely not a linebacker in Seattle anyway.
No. Linebacker's probably a good shout. I still think the secondary is going to need a bit of work, because at the minute, if one of them goes down, let's be honest,
you'd
be bricking it. I mean, I know that Delano's done pretty well when he's come in, but not to a starting caliber, you'd say. And Thompson still makes some strange, you know, he's not a rookie, but rookie-style errors.
Yeah.
I mean, if we lost players in the secondary, I'd be very concerned.
Yeah, but at the same time, imagine losing Bobby.
I'd rather not.
Yeah, don't do Lock and Shop this week before we move on and introduce our guest.
Yes, absolutely. As always, that means I need to pull the schedule up, so I guess, because I always forget, despite the fact that we do this every week.
Yeah, so while Adam gets the schedule up, just one thing on the Seahawks upcoming, well, the remaining schedule, on and DVOA, which is all offense, defense, proficiency, and efficiency, all weighted against each other and far too intelligent for my brain, as the president of America once said a couple weeks ago. The DVOA of the remaining teams the Seahawks face, only one of them is in the top 10, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs on week 16, who are the number one ranked team on DVOA after Monday night. But as you pointed out a couple of times in this podcast on Twitter and every which way you can, they're probably not going to be these Kansas City Chiefs in week 16, are they?
Well, they might be now, having lost on at the weekend. Is Pittsburgh a look in pretty good shape, and they could do a lot of damage? And it's difficult to say that the Chiefs can have a two-game lead over anyone. So unfortunately, we really needed the Chiefs to win that for a number of reasons. But I think that's going to be a tricky one.
Yeah, and elsewhere, the Panthers are ranked 15th. The 49ers obviously pretty low at 26th. The Vikings is 13th, and the Arizona Cardinals in week 17 are the 32nd team. 37 ranked team in DVOA. But on to this week, Thanksgiving week, obviously three games tomorrow night, all of them affected by injury, especially the Bears and Lions game, with the Lions having the number one receiver and number one running back out, and Mitch Trubisky appears to be out for the Bears as well. So your lock of week 12 is, Adam?
The Chargers at home to the Cardinals. Chargers will bounce back and beat Arizona.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the New England Patriots to win at MetLife yet again and beat the Jets. And I think that might be all she wrote for Todd Bowles, unless he's been fired. I don't think he has.
He hasn't.
But I think that'd be the final nail in his coffin. Shock of the week, Adam?
Shock of the week. There's not many, really, that are particularly good. Could Cleveland go into Cincinnati and win? I think that one kind of jumps out at you as one that probably could be. There isn't really anything that would be a shock, really, is there?
No.
Is there a chance the Giants go into Philadelphia and win? You wouldn't have thought so.
Well, if Saquon is going to try his damnedest.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a shock in isolation because they're the better team, but it would just be amazing if the Colts win a sixth game on the bounce. Given all the stuff written about them and Andrew Luck earlier on in the season, and written off in some capacity, and they look a team that could run the table from here on in, to be honest.
Yeah, and the fact that the Colts look so good with basically the Eagles coaching staff last year, and the Eagles offense looks so waylaid and rudderless, as well as the defense is completely bereft of healthy players, it's quite telling. And that team could be quite a problem once they build the rest of that roster, because they have some pretty impressive stars. And they've probably got decent shouts for both offensive and defensive rookie. The guard's never going to get offensive rookie of the year, but Quentin Nelson's going to be pretty high up in that boat, because he's just an absolute mauler. And obviously Darius Leonard on the defensive side is just tackling and sacking everyone he can get his eyes on. Yeah, my shock of the week, I think I'm going to go for the Browns. Baker Mayfield was asked earlier today, if the presence of Hugh Jackson on the Bengals sideline will make any difference to Sunday, and he quite simply went no, which is quite telling for how
he was going to give the Bengals an advantage, even more damning, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, he just quite simply just went no, it's not. So yeah, that's quite telling. I don't think it will. I think the Browns have something going there. Watch for, if you want a fantasy tip, I'm going to start him in fantasy, so he's probably putting the nail in his coffin. Start Duke Johnson, because he's just going to catch all the balls out of the backfield while Nick Chubb runs for 70, 80 yards a clip, as he has been the last couple of weeks. Moving on, obviously this week on Friday night, early hours, Saturday morning in our neck of the woods is the Apple Cup, which is the annual game between Washington State Cougars and Washington Huskies. This year's game is out in Pullman, and it also has a lot on it, with the winner being the Pac-12 North representative in the Pac-12 championship game and the easiest way to the Rose Bowl in the new Year 6 Bowl game. To help us talk about that and talk a little bit about these Seahawks, we are joined this week by a very special guest.
All right, this is Michael Sean Dugar, and you're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast.
So now on the Pedestrian Podcast, we are joined by another very esteemed guest. We are joined by the executive producer on 710 ESPN and the sideline reporter for the Washington State Cougars, Jessamyn McIntyre. How are we?
We are wonderful. It is Apple Cup week, and everything is rocking here in Seattle. About to head over to the Palouse tomorrow, enjoy some turkey, and get after the game. Thanks for having me, guys.
Bruce, massively appreciate you taking what I'm sure, as you say, is a pretty busy week, not just with the Cougs, but obviously with your day job as well, Jess.
Oh, anything for you guys.
Just to interject straight off the bat, I mean, as a British Jew, I have to do neither Thanksgiving or Christmas. And I feel that is a blessing because I don't have to ever have turkey, because for me, it is by far the worst of all the meats. Now, Jess, how would you respond?
Ooh, okay, so we've been having a heated debate in the sports pit today, and while I disagree with you about turkey being the least of the meats because I'm a turkey fan, I think as Thanksgiving goes, it's stuffing,
yep,
mashed potatoes, and maybe the turkey as a vehicle for the starches. You know, okay. It's like a potato chip or, you know, a tortilla chip for salsa, a potato chip for dip. It is unnecessary as it comes to that, but so I do disagree with you and also kind of agree with you.
Well, I'm not going to let you off that easy if it's not the worst of the meats, which is. And it's not listening, so it won't be offended.
Okay, this isn't fair for me to say because I don't eat a lot of the meats.
Okay.
I'm a fish and poultry person. But if I had to guess, I'd go with, having worked at a deli in my earlier years, the olive loaf is probably the worst idea I've ever heard. Were they trying to smuggle olives in a bologna? Were they illegal at some time? And then they decided, hey, we got the olives out. Let's just slice it up and make some sandwiches with it. I don't get it.
What on earth is an olive loaf?
I'm glad the chef had that answer as well.
Yeah, I mean, I read a lot of recipe books for my job, and I've never come across an olive loaf.
Okay, so in New York, I grew up in New York, and in New York delis, where I started working and operating a slicer at probably an illegal age, considering how young I was, you've got these big hunks of meat just sitting there on the counter, and all the salads. Potato salads, a coleslaw, everything, macaroni salad. And, you know, you take, if someone orders a pound of this and a pound of that, or a sandwich of this, sandwich of that, you take the big hunk of meat and you throw it on the slicer and you slice it up. Well, there's an olive loaf. And to be perfectly honest, I don't even know what kind of meat it is. It looked like a congealed substance of leftovers with olives in it. And it has to be some sort of congealed meat for olives to get inside of it, because that's not natural. We're aware of that. And so you slice it up. It actually looks kind of like a kid's Play-Doh creation. And, you know, you slice it up and you get meat and little tiny slices of olives all in it. It's pretty looking, but I wouldn't eat it.
That sounds like black pudding, Adam.
No, it's not. It's going to be like a beige version of salami, I guess, is what it is, right? And it's green olives, yeah?
Green with the pimento inside,
yeah.
Yep.
The name escapes me, and it's really going to piss me off. But I know, I know what it is, and I know it's awful. And even actually, I was in Italy last week, and it's last month, and it's an Italian staple, and even there it's awful. So yeah, you get by with it. I think it's beef. So yeah, the olive loaf is out.
Okay, good.
Good save. We good save. On
thing. Cool. Okay, that was one way to start off on a complete different tangent. Jess, at 710 ESPN, how long have you been covering the team? How did you get to cover the team at 710?
For the Cougs?
For the ESPN Seattle.
Oh, for ESPN Seattle. I will have been here almost 10 years. I will have been here 10 years in March. I started right out of college at Bristol, Connecticut. At ESPN, the HQ worldwide leader, and quickly got recruited out to Seattle to help start a station here. There was only one sports station in town, and I got brought out before we even were on the air, and slowly but surely worked my way up, and I'm now the executive producer, and I have several reporting jobs and hosting jobs, all with our Seattle sports, everything within Washington State. So, yeah, that's the 92nd elevator story.
Yeah, it's the last 10 years has been a pretty fun time to cover the team as well, hasn't it? I mean, you've hit the sweet spot, really.
It certainly is, because when I got out here, the Washington Huskies had gone 0-12, and Jim Mora was taking over the Seahawks. He went 4-12 that year and got fired on a one-and-done. And in 2010, Pete Carroll comes in from USC, and everybody thought that was going to be a disaster. And turns out they were wrong.
Yeah, I heard about that.
I heard about that guy. He's done okay by the sounds of things.
All
things considered. so one thing that I saw of you fairly recently, just to jump around on a little bit, was trying to chase after Mike Leach for a halftime interview, which caused a little bit of buzz. I have to say, I think that of all of the vanilla interviews that I think coaches give, if ever they're losing, the halftime thing seems to be, yeah, we could run the ball better, we could pass it better, and the defense could be better. And then if you're winning, it's like, we could run it better, we could pass it better, and if the defense is better, then we'll definitely win. Have you ever had a particularly interesting halftime interview of someone that actually stands out, as someone said, oh, that's quite interesting?
Well, last year, halftime of the Boise State game, I don't know if you remember that with Mike Leach, when they were losing by quite a bit in their second game of the year. And Mike Leach, for the first time last year, went 1-0 in his tenure at Washington State. He had never won his opening game, and it was almost always against they were favored in every game, I'll just say. Lots of FCS teams. And Boise State in Pullman was beating them by quite a bit. And I went and asked him the most generic question I could, because he's so mad. He talks to me a lot more when they're winning big. At Arizona, I got like two full sentences out of him. You know, when they were up, you know, by they put a 50 burger up in the first half. So anyway, at that game, I asked him, and hopefully this doesn't get out too much, because I think I did a pretty good job of covering it. But he, for the first time in my life, I got F-bombed. And so I basically asked, you know, you're a second half team. What's the biggest thing? What's the biggest adjustment you have to make at halftime? Well, we got to bleep and play. I was like, yes, this is awesome. And so I quickly sent it back upstairs. I wasn't going to let him keep on talking and get himself in any more trouble. And he caught himself, too. Like, he said that, and then he said, well, we got to play. And I was like, okay, coach, that sounds good. I'm probably not going to get anything more out of this one. And I just felt like I was indoctrinated into the sideline reporter world at that moment. And I really enjoyed it, to tell you the truth.
So obviously with Mike Lee, we've had Mike Dugar on a few times over the last couple of years. And we asked him the same, like, obviously you're up close with Mike Leach every fall, and obviously with Pete Carroll, you can't get too many more chalk and cheese coaches and how they approach things, can you? Especially with the media.
Yeah, you know, they're so different, yet I feel like they communicate with the media in a very similar way, just with their separate personalities. They know exactly what they're doing, and they have intent with everything they say. It's just, you're never really sure what their intent is, and they're both brilliant with it, just in very, very different ways. It's funny to say two people who are so, so different operating in a similar way. You know, Pete is this positivity, always compete, everybody's got a chance. And Mike Leach is kind of, well, he's just him. We had Bruce Feldman on our show yesterday, and he responded to the first question. He said, yeah, he's a weird man. You know, it's just so frank, and he is. And Pete Carroll is very, you know, professional and himself, and he's not necessarily buttoned up, but, you know, they still, in the ways that they communicate with the media, different things are coming out of their mouths, but they use the media the same way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, it must just be very difficult to do your job around.
Adam, you've gone.
Yeah.
What do you mean I've gone?
In the shower.
Oh, really? In the shower again.
Still? Yeah. Again?
I can hear you now.
Is that better?
Yes.
Stu, better for you?
Go again. Yeah, yeah.
Great, because I was really messing that question up anyway, so it gives me a second chance.
Yes!
Okay, I'll go again. So obviously it's as dynamic an industry as you can possibly work in. It's as the least scripted thing there is. And it must be very difficult at times to try and do your job and needing to get a story or at least something of vague interest from someone that has to talk to you, whilst also being conscious that it's as emotional a time for people as possible. As basically as possible, how do you go about making the balancing act? And is it a case of working out who you can push and who you need to walk away from at times?
Yeah, I think that at least with Coach Leach is the one that I've worked the most with, and he's the one that I've interviewed the most, so I'll answer based on my experience with him. As a reporter, especially on radio, I'm not necessarily writing a story, I'm telling one. So I don't need to go back and dice things up and, you know, get this great quote to fit this narrative that I already had in mind. What I've realized is that when people are listening to an interview that I'm doing, they don't want to hear me. They want to hear Coach. And when you get to know Coach, he wants to answer the simplest questions. So, a lot of people, especially it's a very short amount of time. I want the audience to, or I used to feel like I wanted the audience to know that I knew what I was talking about, but I started to trust the audience that I would, that they know that I know what I'm talking about and that they want to hear what Coach has to say. So I pared down my questions. He doesn't have a lot of time, as you've seen in a viral video of him sprinting away from me when we're down by 10. So, just making sure that I can get the most out of him with the fewest amount of words. Now, I would treat someone else very differently if I'm doing an interview with someone on a different show or in a different, situation. But it's more about knowing your subject and who you're talking with. And we have a great relationship. I actually was on the coach's show after that game, and he told me that he's almost ready to call me one of the regular guys. Nice. And he's. Yeah, he said he's only bestowed that on 3 women in his life. And then I told him how grateful I was, and he said, I said almost.
I mean, it is obviously an elephant in the room that it has obviously got to be much more difficult for a female reporter to break into it. But presumably it gets easier as you go on and you do more. But does it feel like – well, I mean, I guess that's quite a good story where you almost feel like one of the guys, and that feels like a badge of honor when really it shouldn't, really, should it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess I don't necessarily mean it in that way, because I think he only bestows that on a few men as well. Mm-hmm. I actually, whenever Mike Leach has been ornery with me, I've said he's an equal opportunity grumpy guy, because I think he treats me the same exact way that he would treat any guy. And I mean that. I never really had to break down any barriers when it came to him, or anyone at Washington State, really. And I think it is hard, but I think a lot of, at least I can only speak for myself, a lot of insecurities come from within, where you feel like you're on the outside, but if you take the mentality that you're not and you treat yourself and your situation like you're not an outsider, it makes you more comfortable. And, when you're insecure, you act a little different and you are kind of on the outside. And sure, there are plenty of times where women have it tough. I've had it tough. I just prefer not to live that storyline in my head. And I think it served me well. And then you get the occasional, gentleman things. The only thing that I don't like is being white knighted. And if you aren't familiar with that phrase, it's when guys will protect you from something that you don't need protection from, oh, Mike Leach is so, I can't believe how rude he was. Well, if I was a dude, would you really be all up in arms of him about him running away from me? And I don't think you would. Nobody's, defending, the whole thing with the Nick Saban and Maria Taylor. She handled that whole situation like a pro. If you remember when she was asking about the quarterbacks, and he's very defensive of both more Jalen Hurts than Tua. So, I think everybody got up in arms about that, too. And she handled it like a pro. It's like, hey, we got this. We kind of got this. We're there, unless he's, I don't know, using my makeup against me or something. I don't really know what else different than I have from any other male reporter out there.
So would you see that Mike Leach would ever let something like Techno Thursday be a thing in Pullman?
Mm. Yeah, I don't think he knows what techno is. Honestly, it would be really hilarious. But I'll tell you, you know what? Our defensive backs group would be the one to get it done, though. They're always dancing. They're the ones. I could see them teaching him. That would be a really fun. I just made up a viral video in my head of them teaching him how to, I don't even know what it's called, how to rave. That would be fun.
It would
crush
Mike Dugar as well. It would be so worth it just for that.
He hates that. Oh, my goodness. I forgot about that. Yeah. He and Luke Wilson.
We heard it on the radio.
He has serious issues. Oh, you heard our interview?
Yeah, we heard the clip. We found it.
Yes. Oh, that was so great. Yeah, we brought Mike in for that one.
So obviously covering the Seahawks and then obviously the Cougs, you've worked with two pretty stylish men in Washington State, Danny O'Neill and Gardner Minshew. Who's the more stylish, do you think?
Oh, you got to go with the stash, man. Danny O'Neill just fluffed it up with bow ties and nice shoes. Minshew's straight swag.
how much fun has it been covering this team this year? Obviously 10-1, 9-1, 10-1, moving into Apple Cup. I mean, they're putting up points on absolutely everyone. It must be a fun few months following the team.
Well, it really is, especially considering the low expectations coming into this season. Graduating over 20 seniors, losing 7 assistant coaches, Mike Leach flirting with Tennessee. President Floyd had passed away. There was a new president here. Bill Moose left in the middle of the season last year, so we had a new, no athletic director until February. And then the tragic suicide of Tyler Helinski. It was everybody just wanted to kind of survive this season. And Mike Leach has proven that he can hire great coaches, not good coaches, great coaches. And he has a really good eye for that. People come here. They believe in him. This is not some stepping stone. People do come to Washington State, which I think previously people thought that this was, a step up to the next place because it's a Power 5 conference. But no, you can come here to win. And then flipping Gardner Minshew from Alabama, where he was basically an insurance policy in case Jalen Hurts transferred, because Tua Tagovailoa is absolutely fantastic and he's probably going to win the Heisman. Like all that falling into place, Gardner Minshew was ready to be a backup and not play again just because he wanted to continue, or he wanted to be a coach. He still wants to be a coach. He never knew that he could still play. And this is my favorite thing about him, because when asked about it, he said, I guess I'm going to ball until I can't ball anymore. You have a guy. Yeah, it just loosens everything up where he's so confident in himself that he's not cocky. You know, when you meet someone that's just so confident that they can be quiet at times, and that might sound weird because that's not what you see on TV, because he's always in game action, but he's kind of a reserved guy. He's not all about himself. And the team just followed suit and they found something that they could latch onto, be comfortable with. And every single person just says that they're playing for each other. And I think it's easier to play for someone else than it is to play for yourself.
Full disclosure, Stu and I both support the Huskies, but I kind of feel that I fell into that based on the people that I know from Seattle and family and whatever. But actually, when I look at what Washington State do and what they're doing, that's much more aligned with all the other sports teams that I support, especially here in the UK. And I have to say, even I'm getting completely wrapped up by the story. And if they were to win on Friday, I don't know, I guess I'd kind of be okay with it, because it just seemed such an amazing story. Now, for a fan like yourself, first and foremost, it must just be the most brilliant ride that you don't ever want to stop.
Absolutely. And I felt like that kind of year after year. I still remember I was doing an interview. Someone had called me before the Cal game last year, and Washington State was ranked, I think, 8 or 9 in the country at the time. And I was going to the Cal Stadium. It was a Friday night game, and we had just come off of a win, a drubbing of Oregon on the road, and that was pretty big. And I just said, this is the most fun I've had, and this is probably the greatest I'll ever have it. And we were supposed to go in there and just drill Cal, and they crushed us. Crushed us. And it was a freaky Friday. Syracuse beat Clemson that night. I still remember everything about it. There were wildfires. It was smoky. We almost couldn't play the game. And to think that this year has eclipsed that is kind of amazing. You just got to live in the moment of it. And I think that's what Cougar fans are really good at. is living in the moment and appreciating it. And I'm not taking anything away from the Huskies. We all like the rivalry and we go back and forth. And, you know, the Huskies are all snooty and they're, you know, they have the superiority complex. But I do appreciate the Cougars just, you know, loving their team, loving their school. They don't get really angry when they're losing. You know, when they're not having success, it's not this hatred towards the team. It's almost like the Huskies are like a professional team mm-hmm. where the fans feel like they're owed something and the Cougars feel like they owe something to their team.
Yeah, there's definitely an entitlement to the Huskies fans that I know. And I don't mean that in a, well, I guess I do mean that in a critical way, but I guess the way they have it, they expect to win, which I guess is fine. But so obviously in the UK, I mean, when we listen to our sports radios, each show is trying to cover 72 professional soccer teams at the same time. They don't really get the chance to focus in on one city and, you know, focus on one team specifically in each sport. A, what's that like when you're just covering one team? Does it ever feel kind of enveloping and just too much and you almost wish you could do some other ones? But when you get to a rivalry week like this, when half of your listenership support one team and half of the other, does that have a kind of tangible difference to what you do and how it feels it like in the sports pit and in the studios?
Especially, you know, in-state rivalry, because like you said, it is split. And, you know, I would say it's a pretty friendly atmosphere. If you're going to take it all, I mean, of course, there's going to be the outliers that aren't. But in this environment, I mean, the state of Washington's like a pretty nice, easy place. The media market isn't like New York, where it's in New York. It's almost better if you hate on the team than you love it. It's pretty nice here. And I think there's a lot of respect between the schools, especially because of how long the rivalry has been going on. I mean, it's over 100 years. So just the historical element of it, people respect that and treasure it for what it is. There's always a nice little bet going on between the school athletic directors and the school presidents. It's nice because everyone's paying attention to the one game or the one team that you're covering, regardless of the opponent, because, you know, you're playing the opponent. So it is kind of cool because everything stacks up to this one thing. And, oh, hey, I'm the one reporting on it.
Yeah, one name you mentioned a few minutes ago was obviously Tyler Lenski, first of the UK Seahawks over here, which you saw when you were over in London last month. But yes. What that impact is, he's a figure, the name, who's not just hovering above this team, but he's pushing this team forward, isn't he? Just that they're trying to memorialize him in such a special way by doing what they're doing on the field, aren't they?
Yes, they absolutely are. And several of the players have mentioned that to me in post-game interviews. I just had James Williams, number 32, our outstanding dynamic running back, who, you know, he had a it might have been a career game. I don't know. He's so good. It might not have been. He might have. He approached the best he's done in his career. And I asked him about what the season meant. It was two games ago. So and he just said that this is for Ty and he's the one. And I didn't prompt him on that. He brought it up. And yeah. I think and a lot of the players do that, you know, when the Holinsky family raised the flag at the first home game of the season. It was the second week. Logan Tago took a knee on the field and put up number 3. I see a lot of that. They all wear the decal on the helmet, which was a team decision. And that's something that you don't know how, especially a group of 18 to 22 year olds is going to respond to. And when I talked about earlier, the team playing for one another, I think that's a big part of it, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a devastating blow, not obviously to the team, to the entire sport of the college football, wasn't it, when Tyler committed suicide?
Yeah, it absolutely was, especially because of the lasting image in most people's minds was of Tyler being lifted up by the crowd after the Boise State win. And that's what you saw. So it seemed so unbelievable. It still is to a lot of people to have that kind of tragedy where that's the person that you saw. He was the heir apparent to lead this team into this year where it seemed like everything was going. The one thing I'll say is that it did shine a bright light on, you know, what could be happening that we're not seeing, for college students, for anyone. And, out of unspeakable tragedy, we did see a lot of people come together and also pay more attention, open up their ears, open up their hearts, because you really truly never know what someone might be suffering.
Yeah, and it's, as I've said numerous times in this podcast, the family is absolutely incredible with how, all the help they've given us over the last few months since, I think it was 10 months this last weekend since he died as well. Obviously, but on a bit of a more perky note, we did meet you last month in London. How was that trip, and did you enjoy the party on Saturday night?
Oh, it was one of the best experiences I've ever had. I am so glad. Thank you so much for having us, by the way. I still wear my Helsinki sweatshirt that I got there pretty much every single day. I watch it on Sundays. But that was outstanding. Everyone was so welcoming. It was so crazy to see how many. Now, there's a lot of NFL fans in the UK, but how many Seahawks fans? Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe how loud Wembley was. That game, it was just all Seahawks. It was unbelievable. And the team got so charged up by the fans that were there. Technically, that was an Oakland Raiders home game because they lost the home game there. And it sounded like it was at CenturyLink Field. I was so impressed by not only, you know, what the NFL had done there, but you guys and just making everything outstanding for us visiting. I always feel a little nervous when I'm visiting another country because I don't know customs and I don't want to be rude. I just felt like I could be myself, have a great time, do what I usually do on a regular basis. Thank you so much. I think that you guys deserve a lot of credit.
Well, it was our pleasure. And yeah, we've received amazing hospitality every time we've been in Seattle. So we kind of viewed it as our chance to give a bit back. And I think we did that in droves and had a great time doing it. Now, the team, and I don't think this is a, I don't mean this is a negative way, They didn't necessarily seem that fired up about coming, and it was a long trip for them. How did you guys feel about it? Because it's, you know, a huge imposition on all you guys to have to come all this way. And on a brighter note, did you leave thinking, wow, that was so much better than I was expecting?
I would say the team probably has more right to take issue with that, especially come from the West Coast, because they have to, their job's a lot harder than mine. I think the Seahawks did a really good job of, I know the Raiders came a little bit later. Seahawks did a good job of keeping the guys up when they landed and making sure they got on a sleep schedule. I didn't sleep at all, and it was totally worth it because I was just like, I'm going to get the most out of this. I didn't have any negative thoughts coming into it. I was worried about sleep deprivation, but at the end of the trip, I just said, yeah, that was absolutely completely worth it.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's awesome. And then obviously the Helsinki stuff seemed to come as a bit of a surprise to you guys. And obviously I spent quite a lot of time with Mike during the week and explained what was going on. But it was very clear that you were quite shocked by how much we were able to do with that. And it was such a great thing for us to be able to do. We loved being a part of it.
Yeah, I was just taken aback, honestly. It was really heartwarming to see you guys reach out without necessarily a direct connection at all. The way that the season lined up with the Cougars bye week being on the London trip for all of us, you know, a lot of Cougs were over there, and I was touched, and I made sure that everyone back here over in Pullman got the message too. It's just rare that you see that, and in the face of tragedy, it's another one of those things where, you know, if you want to take something bright out of it, what you can, that's exactly what you guys showed.
Yeah, and yesterday I posted off a package to go to the family, which included the Washington State Cougar flag, which is signed by so many different people who were there that night. So I haven't told them that yet, so hopefully that'll be a pretty nice surprise for them in California. So obviously back on Friday night, over here it'll be early hours of Saturday morning. This is as big an Apple Cup as there's been in quite some time, and obviously because this is not just for the Pac-12, but it's kind of New York Six for either team if whoever wins, isn't it?
Yeah, and I will not go into the depths of my thoughts on the college football playoff in the bowl, but we have seen several of them visit the Cougs this year. The New York Six have been present at our games. The biggest thing is the Pac-12 North. We want to be at Levi's Stadium next Friday. and playing for the conference, which I at least have not experienced. And, you know, the Cougs in Coach Leach's tenure haven't. And they've had this opportunity before in the past. Now, in the past, the Cougs have been playing spoilers. And this time, for the first time, the Huskies are. And it would just be really nice to get them on that grand stage. And everybody wants it to happen. College Game Day had such a great time here. And they, for really the first time that I've seen too, is that instead of not showing up in big games and big situations, they've dominated. And they haven't necessarily played down to their competition. They've played up. And it really is what Mike Leach preaches, just paying attention to their side of the ball. And I think that, I mean, the Huskies defense is going to be formidable. That's going to be one of the best that they face this year, just because Chris Peterson has the air raids number. But I think that their offense is not going to be able to perform as well against our defense as our offense is mm-hmm. against theirs.
Yeah, I do think the Cougars are going to win on Friday.
100%. I'm not even trying to jinx it, but I just think that Jake Browning is going to throw an interception on a game-winning drive, and that's going to end it.
Yeah.
Who's it going to be? Marcus Strong, Skylar Thompson.
You can choose that one. I won't push you into. Yeah, I'll give you the choice. It's mortadella is the olive loaf. I knew that was what it was called, and that's
what it's called.
Mortadella.
Mortadella. That sounds like something in a graveyard.
Well, maybe that's where the olive loaf should be, to be honest.
Let's bury it.
Done.
It does not sound very nice. So, where can people, if they want to get in touch and follow you this weekend when you're in Pullman, on all the social medias, Jess?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter. It's at Jessamine McIntyre without the E on the end, because apparently Twitter doesn't allow that many characters. And if you want to listen to the game, we are available on the TuneIn app, and you can hear Matt Chazanow, Alex Brink, and myself. The greatest voices in the game, those two, not me, because I'm not that braggart. But I love working with them. We have a really great time on the broadcast, and they are truly two of the best I've ever worked with.
Awesome. So as Jess mentioned, with all the stuff we did for Tylinski, we have, as a chapter, been able to confirm that over the London weekend, we raised £10,000 for the four charities we supported, which was Archie Smile, the SSAFA, Tylinski's Hope, and the Paul Allen Foundation as well, with about $2,500, just over $3,000 going to the Tylinski family as well, Jess.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for telling me that. I'm in shock. I can't believe you guys were able to do that. I mean, I can, but yeah. Really appreciate it coming from this end.
No, it's been our pleasure. It's been really rewarding working with the family and managing to see all those numbers on a WhatsApp message and email over the last couple of days from people who have sent me all that stuff. So, yeah, it's been really cool this end, doesn't it, Adam?
Yeah, it's been amazing, and I've said this a million times, but Stu deserves all the credit for it. He won't take any credit, but he reached out, he got it all organised, and has done just a beyond incredible job of linking us with such an amazing charity.
So yeah, massive, massive thanks, Jess, for taking time out of your busy week to jump on. If next time you're in London, there's someone on this podcast who you should definitely look up, because he definitely knows his things about restaurants and spots to hit, as Walter Jones found out, Adam.
Yeah.
Yeah, watch out. You're going to get a couch surfer.
You'll be more than welcome. More than welcome. And I did a night tour with Mike around London on his first day. I was trying to keep him awake, but I think he had a 5-hour nap on the day he landed, which I said to him, do not nap, because you won't be right for the rest of the trip. And he had a 5-hour nap and was not right for the rest of the trip. But we did a night tour. So, you know, anytime you guys are over, anyone in that's listened to us on that side, they're always welcome to some London hospitality for sure.
Well, thank you so much. And I will take you up on that.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Okay. So if anyone gets involved with the podcast, you can. It's on the pedestrianpodcast.podbean.com. On Instagram, we are UK Seahawkers. On Twitter, it's Seahawkers UK. On Facebook, it's UK Seattle Seahawks. Fans personal is at Stu_Court and at Adam D. Nathan, enjoy the Panthers game. Enjoy the Apple Cup. Jess and all Husky and Cougar fans out there. Obviously, the bragging rights will be pretty strong with this one. But until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
just effort, playing as a unit, you know, loving your teammates, just all the necessary things you need just, you know, to win a game like this. Thursday night football, the one thing we didn't want to do is just make it more than what it was. It's just football. At the end of the day, different day of the week. You know, we used to play on Sundays. You know, we had that quick turnaround. But at the end of the day, you know, you got a guy like Aaron Rodgers coming in, so we have to be on our P's and Q's.